All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, November 8th. I am Doug Norrie, and that is
James Davis.
It's election day. Are we voting? No, we're podcasting. Here we go. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you continue winning or get started with DraftKings or FanDuel NFL. You can go to the site and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, which will generate optimal lineups for NFL. Also includes NBA projections all under the same membership umbrella. It's about as good a deal as you'll get anywhere in the industry, and we're proud of it. And I think that you'll just go over there, you'll get the free 3-day trial, and you'll be hooked and you'll be good to go. All right, buddy. Week 9 in the NFL. Week 9 NFL is in the books. Initial thoughts, how did you feel this week went for us?
I felt like it went great. For those of you who don't know, we won the DFAC, the Daily Fantasy Accuracy Cup, this week. So, I mean, it's a season-long contest, but we won this week's iteration of it, where 63 experts put lineups in on FanDuel, and we were the best one. So, obviously I felt it went great from that perspective.
Yeah, our lineups, easy cash game victories, GPP cashing, not very tippy top of the chain, but you definitely had a huge ROI if you played those lineups. Boosts us into the top 10 of the DFAC, which includes a lot of, if you follow anything with DFS NFL, it's a lot of names that you're going to recognize are in that contest. So we're feeling really good. The users were just going bananas on Sunday. It was really just a great day. I can't really, no other really way to sum it up. Feeling good coming out of week 9.
So if you want to know what happened last week, just go listen to our podcast on Friday where we predicted everything perfectly and then go from there.
Great call. We'll take a look at some of the stuff that went down in week 9 and how it maybe affects things in the week going into week 10. It's really crazy to think. I simultaneously think that football just started and we've been doing it forever. Like, I was surprised that this is only the halfway point of the regular season. For some reason, that surprised me. Although at the same time, I was like, man, I feel like I've been thinking about football for my entire life. So I don't really know how to think about the timeline here. A couple interesting things. This is not a DFS thing, but man, that Bills Seahawks game last night, I just don't know how. It's hard to root for football when you can't trust sort of like the refereeing process.
Yeah, then when you can get a fair outcome, sure.
Yeah, and that game obviously throws, I mean, there was two, both all Richard Sherman related, but two huge sort of no-call kind of stuff on Sherman where he just basically just destroys the kicker and then destroys the receiver on the last play of the game. It's really weird to think about football as having like the integrity of it being diminished because of the refereeing process, but games like that where the outcome is swayed by just, I mean, I don't even know, there's no explanation for why some of these things weren't called. I mean, like, how does that, like, maybe it's not a DFS thing, but, I mean, do you kind of feel the same way when it comes to just how these games are refereed?
Of course, yeah. I mean, watching that game and just the influence that a referee can have on a football game is just so outsized because they can, make judgment calls on stuff that blatantly impacts things. So, like, in baseball, for instance, it's pretty tough to make a game-changing, terrible call, right? Like, you can miss a guy like it's a bang-bang play and you don't get it right, but, like, it would be, like, in the equivalent of baseball, if a guy was running to second base and just tackled the guy who was going to try and catch the ball. And the ref was like, what? I didn't see it. Play on, you know? Like, it's so crazy. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm with you. Anyway, it's not DFS-related necessarily, but it does speak to... I think the one thing that football has really gotten... It's really been brought to the limelight this year. It's just the product. I've heard no other major sports season have I heard more talk about just like the macro product being a problem. And like, for baseball, whatever, this season's so long, maybe people mention it, but there's never a good way to judge it. And basketball is a totally different animal. But football this year, between the ratings and just people just saying, oh, NFL this year, just bad. It's just a really interesting kind of turn of rhetoric about the NFL that it doesn't really bode that well for the sport in general. Like, if common fans are saying the NFL product this year sucks, I mean, they're definitely reading that places, but it's just true. Like, these games aren't that interesting to watch. Some of the ones have just things turn on, bad decision-making. I don't know. NFL might just be in trouble going forward. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the death of the NFL is largely overstated just because people have loved the NFL so much. It's like natural for people to fatigue on it a little bit. And also, like, just we see this with DFS too. Once you grow past the diehard fans, it's natural for casual fans to like get greedy and want great games all the time.
Sure.
I do agree that the product seems to have been a little bit worse this year, but I don't know that it rings any bell for the long-term future of the league.
No, I don't think. I don't think the demise of it is probably overstated, but it just is interesting to hear this as sort of a it's probably just a fatigue factor more than anything. All right, let's talk about a couple things that went down in Week 9. Some things that stood out to me. One was Roethlisberger comes back. And, I mean, the Steelers looked just horrible in the first half. I don't know if it was an injury thing for him or, you know, we had Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell sort of separately between FanDuel and DraftKings sort of hedging. I mean, not like we were choosing to hedge, but the system, our system just kind of naturally hedged between those two players. For Pittsburgh, especially when they saw the Vegas line move back into a position of sort of normalcy on the idea of Big Ben coming back, he looked horrible, sort of put it together for the second half. To get some, not on Bell, but at least on Brown, got some value out of him because he, with some more targets. How do you see...
Snuck in the end zone.
Yeah, exactly. How do we evaluate a team like the Steelers now? If we're worried a little bit about injury, they looked really out of sorts against the a fine-ish Ravens D. Like, what are your thoughts on the Steelers?
Yeah, I heard a stat that said that the Steelers are now 2-6 on game, the first game back from when Big Ben returns from a midseason injury. Mm-hmm. So... he gets injured a lot. it makes sense. I mean, he was returning from a torn meniscus, and that's just normally an injury that takes 4 to 6 weeks, and the fact that he was back, or more in many cases, the fact that he came back a little bit early probably could have been an indication that the Steelers were going to be less than sharp, but yeah, I mean, it's a little bit troubling, certainly. Baltimore is a good defense, though, so I think if you can get them in a little bit of a softer matchup, one where Ben's going to have more time to operate, that could be a good thing because, you know, for Roethlisberger against tough pass rushes, he generates a lot of value by creating extra time in the pocket, and that's obviously going to be less likely when you're recovering from a really serious knee injury like that. I guess I'm not super, super worried going forward, but it gives me pause, and it at least makes, you know, Brown and Bell not the complete slam dunks maybe that they had been before that.
Another thing that sort of stood out this week was just the, I don't know if it's a trend, but the idea of just some different running backs that sort of topped out the list of overall fantasy production. The biggest one, obviously, is Melvin Gordon. He goes out and rushes for almost 200 yards. They gave him the ball a ton, 32 times against 10, in a really, 78 total points put up in that Tennessee-San Diego game. But, you know, that's 32 carries is obviously the elite. You really almost can't even get more carries in a game. You rarely see guys touch over 30.
Yeah, these days, sure.
Right. And so, you know, you get guys like him, other guys at top of the list, Mark Ingram. This is where I'm like, I don't kind of trust totally what Sean Payton says because they just end up giving him the ball 15 times. He was great, 10.5 carries because he broke a long run. So it's a little probably skewed in terms of like what his expectation is going forward. The Oakland leans a little bit on Latavius Murray. You know, what are your thoughts on some of these running backs that we're seeing at the top of the list?
Yeah, I mean, it is unusual because even guys like Ezekiel Elliott, who wound up having a pretty nice day overall, gets just 92 yards. Of course, they restricted his workload a little bit thanks to it being a huge blowout there. But yeah, I mean, I don't know that you can necessarily trust Ingram or Murray going forward, but I was very reassured to see the Melvin Gordon performance. I mean, not reassured. Gordon's been great all season, but it just, I think, speaks to him kind of moving up into that tier of the Ezekiel Elliott opportunity type guys where, you know, in a league that's so uncertain at the running back position right now, the combination of injuries and committees like the Ingram and Murray's of the world will attest beneath that. I think Gordon is an elite sort of RB1. And actually right after them on the list is Jay Ajayi. Puts up 111 yards against an excellent Jets run defense and 24 carries. I think that gives Ajayi sort of that matchup-proof stamp going forward, and I suspect he'll still not be priced like the elite guys, and he probably should be. I mean, 24 carries, again, 111 yards and a touch, that's probably something like his floor going forward, and he'll be a great play.
Yeah, because the only thing we were really worried about him was just what the sort of Dolphins plan was, right? Like, this is really what you're worried about for most running backs. It's not even necessarily the talent. I mean, there's clearly some running backs that are less talented than others. Like, Ezekiel Elliott is insanely talented. Right now, he has an offensive line that's great, too. But,
sure.
You know, he's clearly, like, an elite talent. But some of these other guys, they all sort of trend toward this middle ground of running back. And so at that point, if you're assuming that a lot of them are very, very similar, all you're waiting for is for a team to sort of, you know, either explicitly declare or declare through their game plan of what their plan is to do. And Miami was a team that just never would do that until now, right? And so, you know, Ajayi gets a little price climb this week in terms of he's up to 7,800 on FanDuel. Now, I think some people, and I said this last week at 7,400, some people are going to look at that and think, Oh man, I remember when he was six. You know, we say this a lot. Like, if you just have this in your mind of when you remember when a guy was cheaper, it can influence the way you think about his current pricing in the moment now. But really, he probably, based on this opportunity, he really probably should be more in the 8,000 range. Just because if he's just going to get 24 carries sort of on lock on a week-to-week basis, and Miami would be absolutely nuts if they didn't continue to do this. So I think even them, this is the old, just sometimes even bad coaches can just be forced into the right decision by a player doing something. So
yeah, blind squirrel finds a nut.
Exactly. So Ajay, he's a guy that we're probably going to take a pretty serious look at in cash games this week against the San Diego team that's not great against stopping the run. And sort of switching over to, well, actually, before we switch over to receivers, Latavius Murray, this was a guy we were worried about earlier in the season in terms of the Raiders. I kind of said, well, we'll give it to him to start. We'll see how he does. And then he got hurt, and then they brought in this running back by committee that was pretty garbage. And now he's back getting the carries. Is he a running back one kind of guy we can trust for the Raiders? Like, have they made their intentions clear with him, you think?
No, I mean, this still seems like a pretty fuzzy situation to me. Actually, it reminds me of the Ingram and Hightower situation. So the Ingram and Hightower situation, Ingram winds up putting up the biggest yardage total of the week, but had just 15 carries, and Hightower wound up with 23. There were just so many possessions to go around that both of them were serviceable fantasy running backs. Oakland, it's a similar story there, although the running back two is kind of split into two. So Murray had 114 yards and the three touchdowns, of course. So you love the fact that he's the definitive goal line back. But Richard and Washington combined for 18 carries as well, and we're pretty solid on those carries. So I don't know that you can definitively really say anything about the Oakland running situation other than the fact that Murray is a definitive goal line back. And that's certainly worth something, but I do worry that in a week where they got fewer carries to spread around, that he might wind up more in like the 15 to 17 carries range, or even in the low teens, and that would make him a pretty tough play for DFS.
Yeah, it's interesting comparing Ingram and Murray together, because it's easy to look at their final outputs and think that these guys are safe, because especially with Ingram, because averaging 10 yards per carry. But that will throw you off a little bit if there's still uncertainty with it. So this is a situation where I'm happy to let others just sort of look at those, the final yards and the touchdowns, as a marker for safety or upside or whatever. But And now, again, there might be upside if they were to get locked into 20 carries each, but that doesn't seem to be the case. So sometimes those final yards and touchdown outputs can throw you off in terms of just projecting outward. And that's sort of the difference between guys like Ingram and Murray and JJ. So I see them sort of as totally different classes of running backs at this point.
And one last guy I wanted to just, shine a light on really briefly, because we have seen a couple of offensive coordinator shifts so far this season, is Chris Ivory. So he comes out 18 carries for 107 yards. He did lose a fumble on the goal line, which was, I didn't play him or anything, but I could just feel for those people who were like just playing him on a whim or whatever. And that's an 8-point swing. And it looked like a bad call too, to my eyes. It did look like he got in, but TJ Yeldon gets just 7 carries. Ivory was more effective on a yards per carry basis, had the big run. So I don't know that we can definitively say anything there, but it's just a brand new offense with a new offensive coordinator. So I think it's at least keeping an eye on. And if the right deal comes up, or if you're looking for an offbeat guy for big tournaments or something, Ivory could consider. Worth noting on FanDuel, he's just 5,200. So you really are, if you project him as getting a 3-to-1 ratio of carries over Yeldon there, then he could be worth it for even cash games this week.
Yeah, he's interesting, especially I think you made the best point there is that the offensive coordinators switch if they're just having a new plan going forward. They were able to sort of stay in the game. The defense on Jacksonville is not terrible. Like, it's just a shame they have no quarterback play, really, but because they could be able to stay in games, but they simply just can't score. Though they feel like they can lean on him a little earlier in games and sort of slow the pace down. The defense isn't terrible. Like, it's not the defense they had last year where they were just letting up just monster huge chunks of passing yards. That's just really not the case for them this year. So Ivory probably actually fits that a possession game for them a little better than a guy like Yeldon would. So that'll be interesting. We'll definitely have to boost his expectation and carries going into this week, because I think that's something they probably stick with. And on the receiver front, it's fun. Another week, another target sort of monster guys like Mike Evans and Julio Jones get back into are still in those double-digit target areas. Those guys seem to be sort of at this point elite in terms of just opportunity. Very few other, Evans saw 17 targets. Jones saw like 11 or 12, I think. There's that class of receiver, and I think those guys sort of stand alone. Are those guys kind of on an island to themselves, or can you throw in other guys like Antonio Brown or AJ Green into the group with Jones and Evans?
I don't put Jones in that group, actually. I mean, he, not to say he's not elite. I mean, he's been tremendous this season, but Jones still, he's not even in the top 10 in the NFL in terms of targets this season so far. So while it's definitely been a welcome sign recently, and I think you can probably project him as better than a top 10 guy going forward, I just don't know that he's like the slam dunk. He's not like what he was last year, I don't think, where you can just count on him eyes closed and not worry about it at all. Do you see it differently?
Well, it's funny. I in some ways I do, I guess in some ways I don't. I think there's very few other guys up in that elite group. The problem with him is that he's still priced as a, probably like a 12 or 13 target a game guy, and that maybe isn't the case. And that's probably the only issue with him going forward. Like, but I at the same time I see your point of like where he ranks sort of season long in terms of targets. A couple of really like weird injury games I think might throw that number off a little bit, like where he was just playing injured, where it was clear that he wasn't 100% while he was playing. But I mean, if that's going to be a thing where they play him when he is 100%, then I'm not sure how much you can trust it either. So
sure. Well, like 2 weeks ago, he played against Green Bay and had 5 targets and 3 catches for 29 yards. Like, you just can't put him in that group of like these guys are in a tier above, you know, because if the injury is going to nag and be on and off and whatever, like, he just won't be there. And even last week, like 11 targets, 111 yards, that's not terrible, it's definitely not terrible, but it's also not like this barn burner, like, you know, Antonio Brown when things are clicking, or even Julio Jones when things are clicking sort of thing. He's still greatly buoyed by that one 300 yard performance, which is insane to say. I mean, anyone getting 300 yards in an individual game is just amazing, but yeah, I can't put him there, even though the yards have been incredible and he's had some great games.
Speaking of targets, we had Stephon Diggs had probably the worst 13 catch game you could ever have. This is a guy that we liked going into the week, but he catches 13 balls for 80 yards and no touchdowns. I haven't gone back into like historically archive some of this stuff, but I can't imagine you have less per yard production on this many catches. That being said, the amount of look, if you're going to get this kind of looks, that will be the absolute floor of what you're probably expecting to see on a week-to-week basis from a receiver. Like, is this a guy that they're still upside on if he's just clearly the number one receiver for Minnesota?
Oh, I think so. Diggs, another guy with the new offensive coordinator there. And, you know, the fact that he got 13 targets, like, he was seen as more as a downfield threat earlier this season, or I think going into the season, rather. And I think, you know, with the new offensive coordinator, they're looking at just trying to keep the ball close, you know, play to Sam Bradford's strengths. And while Diggs is their best downfield threat still and their best athlete on offense, if you can just get him the ball close to the line of scrimmage and try to give him some yards after the catch, then you could see some big games and some high floor games coming. So he didn't happen to break one this week, but that's not to say that he won't in the future.
Yeah, I'm not seeing the stat in front of me, but I can't imagine his yards after the catch were anything more than like 4 or something like that. It seemed like he just caught the ball and got tackled every single time. I know that's an overstatement or whatever direction I'm incorrectly stating that, but yeah, he just wasn't, there was nothing going on. There will be a day he breaks a tackle and probably it will be sort of off to the races. Yeah, another guy, sort of like the Diggs category, Golden Tate, last 4 weeks, he's seen his targets go 12, 9, 12, 10. I mean, this is after Marvin Jones was sort of the talk of the Detroit town early in the season, but Tate has now climbed, it appears as if he's climbed back into this sort of safety valve possession guy for Stafford, which we know Stafford is just pretty elite when it comes to these, especially short, quick routes.
Yeah, he's shown it the last 2 seasons for sure.
Right, and we've seen Tate sort of when it starts to become the man in Detroit that he can put up some pretty big numbers. Now, again, he fell a little bit victim to that Stephon Diggs situation where 12 catches and then only 79 yards. He did catch a touchdown, but averaging more than double-digit targets over the last 4 weeks, is he back into that? Is he sort of back into where we saw Golden Tate when Megatron was hurt and out last year?
Yeah, again, probably not quite up to that level just because there are more options there. You know, healthy Eric Ebron, and Ebron's probably another guy we should mention. We liked him going into this week. He was solid. You know, just another first-round pick that they have a lot of incentive to get moving. But yeah, no, I really like Tate. I think we saw that their intention early in the season was to get him the ball more, and they kind of struggled to do that for various reasons. I think just because they were trying to prioritize the long ball. But I think he's a great possession guy, and particularly on DraftKings where you can get the points per reception, I think he'll be an excellent play going forward.
Yeah, and like I said, this is Stafford's game, right? This is Stafford. I was saying to somebody last week, I was like, I think Stafford sometimes gets a bad rap in terms of just being a quarterback because he throws so weird, and I think that influences the way people think about him as a quarterback. Is his throwing style just looks weird. Like, it looks short-armed, and it just doesn't look like that natural, smooth motion that you see from a lot of other, like, sort of huge downfield arm guys. But on the short game, he's just an accurate passer, and he has guys like this now that he can go to. So not that I necessarily like Stafford any more or less, but it does boost the value of those guys that run those quick out routes, or even the underneath stuff, because Stafford will just be able to hit you on those passes. Other receivers, I mean, I mentioned Tate and Diggs. Do anything else jump out to you from the receiver ranks?
Sure. I mean, we saw Mike Wallace have another big week this week. He did it in totally opposite fashion to what he did against the Jets. So he had 4 receptions, but for 124 yards, including, of course, a 95-yard catch, which is a lot of yards to get in one catch. I still don't know that you can necessarily trust it going forward, but worth noting, like Tate, he's averaging just under 10 yards per game, 10 yards, 10 targets per game in the last 5 games. So clearly, you know, in that wide receiver one sort of category there in Baltimore, and just could be a good guy to have on your radar for big tournaments. The other one that I thought...
Well, hold on real quick before you get off Wallace. Yeah. The only thing I would maybe disagree with there is maybe the double-digit targets over the last few weeks, but only 6 this last week, and that was with Steve Smith back. So I don't know if I would put him in that class. Like, I don't think those targets from
the... I'm more putting him in the class as, like, the big upside guy. Like, he's not a Golden Tate, like... safety guy, and that you can just count on him to pencil him in. But when they want downfield action, he's their guy. I guess that's my more point.
Fair enough.
And I think he'll be under-owned, particularly with Steve Smith being back. So I don't think he's like a great play necessarily, but I could see scenarios where you would want him for a big tournament.
Okay.
The other guy that I was looking at, kind of in the same vein, is actually Robert Woods. Robert Woods is a guy that has popped up in our projection system from time to time when the targets kind of start flowing in his direction more aggressively. And, you know, he hadn't really put up a huge game until last week when he did against Seattle, 10 receptions for 162 yards. And, you know, I think it could have been an even bigger game. I did think, you know, again, with some questionable, you know, potential pass interference stuff, whatever. But he's a guy that has never really put it all together. He's not a great red zone target necessarily. But again, in terms of just an offbeat guy who's getting outsized opportunity that might not be on your radar, he's a guy I would, again, consider for big tournaments.
Yeah, for sure. And we still get pretty solid quarterback play from the guys that we were expecting it from, guys like Breeze and Rodgers. I know Brady didn't play this week, though. We can consider him to be a pretty safe quarterback. There does seem to be this group of quarterbacks at the upper, and they're priced like it at this point, so it's not like you're getting any deals on any of these guys. But those, you know, that sort of group of guys does appear to just have their floors pretty locked in. Breeze has a bad matchup against Denver this week, and Brady has a bad matchup against Seattle. So it's going to be a little interesting with going into this week with quarterback play. But, you know, we also saw some guys jump out as in terms of just having some bigger games this week. What did you think about quarterbacks?
Well, Colin Kaepernick is obviously the one that comes to mind. It was an ideal matchup. Actually, you texted me in the first half saying something along the lines of, you'd think the Saints could make anyone a great quarterback, but Colin Kaepernick is, you know, the exception to the rule or something like that. And then, of course, he goes out and gets almost 400 yards, most passing yards.
I think it was like right after that he just started like just dialing it up. Yeah.
I mean, they still got crushed, right? Like, they only still scored 23 points. What does that really tell you about him going forward? I don't know that it says that you should just trust the guy and, you know, feel like you can jam him home. He's not cheap at all on FanDuel anymore, really at 7,300. So I'm hoping to avoid falling into the Kaepernick trap, but I know I can fall in love with the upside there from time to time. Still, though, if you consider the last 2 weeks, you know, Tampa Bay, the 28th overall passing defense, New Orleans, the 30th overall passing defense. It's not like he did this against great competition necessarily. And he also just only scored 18 fantasy points a game during that time. Now, that's not terrible or anything, but it's obviously not super elite. And I don't know that you should just count on him to be your solution to quarterback going forward.
Yeah, it stands to reason they're going to be playing a lot of games from behind, which actually does help him for two reasons. One, there's obviously the throwing aspect of it, but also if he's dropping back in the pocket and then running, he didn't actually run that much this week, kind of didn't need to because he was actually completing some passes.
Right. And he had been, though. I mean, he had been running a ton. So
he had 150 yards rushing over the last two weeks prior. So, I mean, that's like a decent running back, right? So, I mean, that's the thing that helps him in sort of like game script categories where, again, these matchups, like you said, were about as good as you can get, and Arizona's not the case. But guys like that just do have, they just have high floors, right? Because if he drops back and pass, can't find anybody, and then takes off, you know, that makes up a lot of the mistakes you make in pass. And for DFS purposes, your team's totally sunk if Kaepernick's your quarterback. Like in real NFL, it's kind of just, it's all over for you. But in DFS strategy piece, that does just help you so, so much. So I don't know if I love him against, he's only 5,800. I don't know if I love him against Arizona, but he strikes me as a sort of a big tournament upside guy because of what he can do that a lot of other quarterbacks can't. Yeah, and sort of on the other side of that coin, you get another game from Cam, a little bit weird. I mean, he's had some completion issues. He only went 20 for 32 against the Rams, only 225 yards passing. He did run seven times, which is sort of, that's a trend that's kind of coming back for him a little bit over the short term since the concussion. He's actually got on scrambled a couple times and actually had a couple designed runs during the game. So it's actually the design run piece that I see is the most encouraging for him from a running perspective, because that means they're just okay with it, sort of, right? Like, it's one thing to scramble because you're just in trouble. It's another thing to say, hey, we're going to call your number on this one. So I just don't know what to do with Cam. It's just, we saw him as sort of an elite DFS play earlier in the season. I'm just like not sure he's in that class anymore. I'm not exactly sure the reason why.
Well, I think a lot of it still is that they're not going to trust him on goal line carries to the degree that they can, because they just don't want him to take those high impact hits. And that, not that that's where all of his value would come from in the past, but enough of it, right? I mean, if you compare him to some of these other elite priced options, so he has 20 fantasy points a game this season. That's less than Ben Roethlisberger. That's, you know, just 0.1 ahead of Dak Prescott, right? So it's 0.5 ahead of Blake Bortles. You're just not really doing anything interesting with Cam Newton, unfortunately. And while he does have the upside, I mean, if he has one of those games where he has 90 yards and maybe he punches in a rushing touchdown or something, he can still win you a big tournament. So it's not that he should fall off your radar altogether. It's just that he'll never be a cash game play for the rest of the season. And then, you know, once you've fallen out of that kind of consideration, then you're just basically Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota or just like a guy, you know. So,
right.
I just find him kind of totally uninteresting right now.
All right, I think that's it for us today. Recapping week 9 in the NFL, starting to look ahead to week 10 and beyond. We'll be back again on Thursday morning where we'll break down our NFL value cash game plays for the week. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com or dfsr.com. Head over to the site, free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Free for 3 days and just $29.95 a month after that. You're all set to go, buddy. I'll talk to you again on
Wednesday. I want to put one other thing, reminding that you also would have won the DFAC last week had you just played our optimal lineup. That was no fancy sauce. That was just click calculate on our site, copy that lineup right onto FanDuel, play, win the DFAC.
Yeah, if you're wondering if we play our own lineups, yes, we do. And people say, do you like the optimal lineup? I say, it's the optimal lineup. That's just the one we're playing. So that's it's all we do. There's no secret. There's no little secret or hidden little tricks and whatever. That's just what we do. We're really straight up about it. And you just kind of know what our system thinks every week. And we do put our money where our mouth is. Talk to you guys again on Thursday. And yeah, all right, here we go.
Now we can say goodbye.